I'm Joanne Wilson, and this is Positively Gotham Gal. Real, honest, and meaningful conversations with women entrepreneurs about their approach to life, business, and everything in between. Amanda Schutzbank and Deborah Benton are the team behind Willow Growth Partners. Willow provides early growth capital to entrepreneurs building transformative consumer brands and the disruptive technologies that power them. I sat down with Amanda and Deborah, and we talked about the future of consumer brands, investments from the entrepreneurial perspective, and the thesis that brought them together pre-COVID-19.
Amanda, Deb, thanks for coming. And I am very excited for you too that you, I guess through the LA environment, I must have known that you knew each other, but that you are joining forces to start a new fund. So just, I want to go back first and tell a little bit about each of who you are. So Amanda.
Sure. Amanda Schutzbank. I'm originally from New York. So I grew up in New York. I went to school in Philly at Wharton. And got sucked into the investment banking world soon after, as with everyone else. So I did time at Goldman and Merrill and was in the tech group over there. And so got to see the LinkedIn IPO, which was a super exciting time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a fun time. I was the low-level analyst on the deal, but it was super fun for me. And at that point, all my friends were going into private equity. And I was like, what's this venture capital thing? I'm super interested in that. Ultimately decided I needed to learn the operating side before I went into VC. And so I called David Tisch, who a lot of people in New York now know as kind of part of the venture community. And he was running the TechStars program at the time.
That's when I met you.
Which is when I met you. And I begged him to be his associate, basically. He was like, I'm not going to pay you anything, but sure. So I took the risk and I did that. And I was an associate in the program at TechStars in New York, where people like you were coming in and hanging out, helping the companies. And of course, I was like the little associate that was like, Joanne, please take me out to lunch. I want to hear all about what you think I should do with my life. So super grateful for that. And so, after that, I joined one of the companies in the program. It was called Karma. It's a consumer hardware product based in New York. I ran all of our marketing and acquisition for 4 years. Completely self-taught, had no idea what Google AdWords was at the time. I called the Warby Parker guys and was like, hey, what's a Google AdWords? You want someone to teach me that over there? Figured it out pretty quickly. We raised a bunch of bridge rounds, had a super hard time raising an A, and thought that was a really eye-opening experience for me. It was hard.
For sure.
It was hard. And if you remember, that company was like the hot company to come out of that year. So
And the date on hot companies, someone told me the other day, and I think I brought this up, is that he had watched all the hot companies when he went into venture out of banking. There were 18 hot companies in LA when he joined, and he followed all of them, and they're all now big donuts.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So, but it was a fun ride.
It's an interesting correlation. I think there's something there.
I think there's something there as well.
I learned a lot. Yeah. So that was great. So I did that for almost 4 years, and then was really passionate about venture and why my venture investors weren't helping me as much as I thought that they could.
Or they should.
Mm. And I was watching what was happening in the Bay Area with Andreessen's obviously the great prime example of platform teams and how they were building that out. So I got connected to Ben and Brad at Primary Venture Partners in New York and was like, hey guys, I want to build out something for you that really truly does do portfolio support in the right way after you write the check. So I spent 2 years doing that. I built an expert network for them of about 100 operators in New York. My goal was to not go after C-level, but to go after the VP directors who weren't really being tapped to be mentors or advisors to these companies. And ultimately got them to join boards, got them to leave the company they were at and join the companies in our portfolio, which was amazing.
Pretty amazing.
Actually, Chief in New York was incubated at Primary with the two people who I know you interviewed on the podcast.
I did.
Recently.
And actually, they came to me originally about money, and I just was like, wasn't for me, but it's pretty impressive.
They're
what they've
fantastic.
Done.
Yeah. So they were both experts in the Primary Expert Network. And then we kind of were like, you two, do it.
Amazing.
Amazing. So I did that, and then I moved to LA about 3 years ago. So I live here now full time. I joined Amplify here in LA, which is a pre-seed venture fund, generalist fund, but I tended to focus on more of our consumer investments, including e-commerce marketplaces and technology that powers e-commerce brands. And so through that journey, I met Deb. And so we, when I first moved here, she was presented to me as the e-commerce angel, and don't do a deal unless she does it with you. And so I took that to heart. So yeah, I took that to heart, and every deal that I looked at, I sent to Deb. So we've looked at hundreds of deals together.
Which is pretty amazing.
Which is great.
So you got to date for years.
Years, yeah.
And before the commitment.
Before the commitment, which is super important.
It's great, right?
Yes. Yeah, because people commit sometimes before dating. Yeah, and that is not good.
No. And we've seen some of the disasters that happen.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah. And so you guys are now starting a fund.
Yes.
Which is pretty amazing.
So as of January of this year, we are now official. We've launched Willow Ventures. And I'll let you give your overview of the fund. But it's super exciting. And I get to focus on the sector I've been focusing on and want to really hone in on.
Which is consumer.
And start my own thing from scratch. And two women managing more money is what we need, especially in LA.
For sure. And Deb?
So a completely different background.
Which is a good entirely.
Thing. Entirely. Like 100% different. So I've been in LA for over 20 years now.
Yeah.
I went to undergrad and business school in Canada, moved out here, joined a consulting firm, quickly realized not for me, but great training ground. Joined one of my clients at the time who joined eToys as the CFO. And if you remember back in the day, eToys is one of those hot companies. You know, it was the poster child of...
Everything put E in front of it.
E. Like E everything.
E-ties, E-dogs, E-pets.
Yeah. Remember that? Yes, everything, everything. Mm-hmm. But what a ride, right? What an incredible ride. And so I saw firsthand, I didn't even know what venture capital was, you know, coming out this whole new asset class and what does that mean in these and valuations, and this is kind of crazy and we're losing so much money, but by the way, we're going public and we took the company public and, you know, proceeds paid for my half of my wedding. I mean, I'm like, this is great. Like, let's do more of this. And then the following year, the company filed for bankruptcy. After, you know, going public and becoming a penny stock and eventually becoming delisted. So, you know, it was...
Which I'm going to assume we're going to see more of.
I think we're going to see fallout. Quite a bit of fallout. Yeah, yeah. Both in the private and public markets, actually.
Completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was hooked. It was one of the most exciting times of my life because the people involved, I knew we were at the precipice of something. I knew it was a really exciting, I would say, sea change that was happening. Mm-hmm. Consumers, you know, having access directly to brands, brands being able to talk. And it's all over because it was the internet. So we had customers all over the place. This was crazy, kind of new. Very smart people trying to do things differently. You know, this is back in the day where customers would call us up and say, I've placed an order, but I'm going to give you my credit card over the phone because I don't trust to put it online.
Oh, yes. I do remember that.
I mean, I would say 50% of our orders.
Right. Now you can't get anyone on the phone.
No. Because they basically don't exist. Right. I mean, it's how things have changed in 20 years. That was kind of my foray into this early stage world, and I really was hooked. We had the crisis of March of the year after we went public, which was, you know, didn't help our trajectory. All the venture capital kind of dried up in LA, which was not a big source of VC capital at this point, but any kind of secondary sources really dried up. I went and then had a completely different experience working for a very, very established company called Teleflora, privately held by the Resnicks here in LA, who are extraordinary entrepreneurs themselves and have a number of businesses, very profitable. And so what that experience, they gave me $100 million P&L to manage, which I was sorely underqualified to do. But with private businesses, you can actually have those opportunities if you meet the right people. So Stuart Resnick gave me that opportunity. And it was great because, you know, for 4 or 5 years, I was able to see, okay, this is the end goal. We need to be creating businesses that make money, right? I mean, this novel concept.
This is the 2020
twist. Could you imagine?
I mean, you know, it was okay. How do we make more money? How do we increase our operating margins? Okay, well, we've got to look at each kind of component. So foray into that world was very important because I was able to kind of GM this P&L, understand both sides. And whereas I was super excited at the early stage because there was so much chaos and so much innovation and creativity, this was an integral part of my career of seeing, okay, eye on the prize, right? You know, you can raise and raise and raise at these silly valuations and wow, it's all so exciting and you can celebrate it. But at the end of the day, we need to be making money.
That's right. That's the end goal.
It is the end goal.
And it's the same thing with venture capitalists. They have one job, to return money to the LPs.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it'd be nice to build businesses and economies and jobs, but that's their job.
That's their job. And, yes. And as a founder and as a company, the day you take the first dollar of external capital, your life changes.
Completely.
Right? Your life completely changes. You now have to, you are obligated to return ideally a multiple and a significant multiple given the risk that this investor has taken in you.
So and ideally.
Ideally. That doesn't often happen. But even worse, a lot of these founders are they're either unaware or they don't really think about it. There's, you know, from my experience, there's not enough focus placed on the relationship building and the alignment of expectations between the founder and the investor beforehand. And I think the onus is on both parties. And from my experience, I think both parties abdicate enough of that responsibility, and they're both responsible for it.
That's interesting. In many ways, I agree with you, because if you have a great idea and you're an entrepreneur and you're going out there and raising capital, you don't have to go too far to see what others have done. But there's a part of me that feels like the investor should be the adult in the room. Like you said, should be involved, be honest, be transparent, mm-hmm. expectations yes. set. You know, I've been saying to some entrepreneurs recently, you know, I want you to hone in on your inner Travis. Yes. And although he was certainly, we all know the story about Travis and yep. Uber, mm-hmm. he did build what he wanted to build.
Yes. Yep.
And he took everyone through with him. And I think there is a lot of push and pull that a lot of investors don't do shit.
Yep.
They come with the same goddamn stupid questions to every board meeting, mm-hmm. and they think they know better than the founder instead of pushing the founder to use their brain, mm-hmm. which is how they got there in the first place, mm-hmm. to be creative to how we mm-hmm. get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back to the money, we have these venture funds that are putting so much money in these consumer products to get them to that show my LPs how much money I made.
Yes.
And they're going to go up and they're going to go down. And I think it is just abysmal that that is not what they should be doing.
It is abysmal.
That is why we're starting.
That is the thesis essentially of exactly this fund.
So what's your thesis?
Thesis is, so let me revert just for a sec because it ties into this. So I had this experience, but I missed the early stage, went back to the early stage, mm-hmm. ended up being on the executive team of two very prominent consumer digital brands that I'm sure are on the list of that eight to those 18 companies mm. that your friend referred to earlier. So I'm going to leave the names out. Mm-hmm. But I saw for the first time, I had the wherewithal and the knowledge and I guess the exposure to understand truly what the thesis behind venture capital, pure venture capital is, what the kind of risk that they take and what they need, how they need these companies to perform and to grow in order to get the kind of returns that they're looking for. They're Correct. Looking for outsized risk-adjusted returns for this asset mm-hmm. class. What I experienced firsthand and in kind of the community of these brands that I saw, too high valuations, raising too much capital, lack of discipline around spending, focus on the top line, no path to profitability, no focus on unit economics or what is core to the business. Because these consumer
and
brands...
no management, which I, to add to, I think that because the venture capitalists are so focused on valuation mm-hmm. and not coming in at the right price, mm-hmm. that they're missing out on something which is extremely important, which is building the right culture.
Correct. Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, look, we've seen that in spades, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we've seen that in spades. And I think what's exacerbating that issue, and my biggest complaint, or one of my biggest complaints with the venture or the investor community, is insufficient governance at the board level. Mm-hmm. It's just insufficient because, and I think it's a result of there's just so much
bad
herd mentality, right? Trying to get into these hot deals. Nobody's doing sufficient due diligence, right? They're really spending the time. I just read somewhere that in earlier venture, it used to be 90 days between kind of first contact and getting into diligence.
No longer.
Nine.
Which is absurd.
Which is yeah. absurd.
And the seed evaluations are high. But what is interesting also about that is that there are all these associates that are sitting on these boards that ask the same stupid fucking questions. Yeah. How much money you got in the bank? What's your burn?
Yeah, that's all. That's it.
Who's going to be your next round? Like, there's nothing. And I've been spending time talking to people to come in doing later stage mm-hmm. boards because sort of burnout on the early stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got off the phone with someone last week and he said, let's keep this conversation going. I was like, fantastic. And I said, before we get off the phone, which really stuck with me, what is it that you want this person that we're talking about that I could possibly fill to look like? Are they have a Rolodex? Do you want them helping you figure out your work org chart? Do you
is
want
there
them
functional expertise? Right,
you know, what is it you want from this person? Mm-hmm. Expertise in marketing, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And he said, I want this person to ask me the 15 questions you asked me that no one my board has ever asked before.
Yes. Yes,
it's true.
And I'm just like, oh my God. Yep. Now, he happens to be a super sharp guy mm-hmm. and his experience very similar to yours and yep. went into the entrepreneurial end. So he'll be fine. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he's not getting any support yeah. from the venture yeah. world.
If I've learned nothing else, it's those first 3 to 5 years.
Key.
Oh my goodness. Most vulnerable, most easily off the tracks, has the least support.
Completely.
And no need to reinvent the wheel often, right? Mm-hmm. Like oftentimes they're doing something over and over again that we've seen companies do successfully or unsuccessfully. And so we can just coach them on saying, hey, that you know, try it this way
or this didn't
this
work.
Or this
right.
didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Or let me connect you to another portfolio company who's going through exactly the same issue.
Totally. Right? I mean, I talked to someone the other day who's going out to raise, and the concept is that it's going to be for sustainability. It's nothing to do with really sustainability. It's the same freaking business. It's been around for hundreds of years. You just put new lipstick on it, right? And so there are ways to point to publicly traded markets and sure. what have you to know what kind of valuation you should be getting.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to talk to you both about, what is the future of consumer products, right? I'd love to look at data and like, you know, when oatmeal was made or when, you know, we started like, I remember all the new ice cream when Ben and Jerry's came out. Now right. everything is going to be green and plant-based and gluten, you know,
yeah.
And then there's all this capital. It still appears to me that the private equity people have a much better understanding
much
of
better.
When you enter consumer product markets because their thesis mm-hmm. is different, their financials are different, mm-hmm. and you guys are going to be looking at consumers. Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the future and what's going to happen to like Casper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's put a pin in that
but,
one.
Yeah, well, you can go deeper on this, but just really quickly. So we are launching Willow Ventures. Mm-hmm. It's an early stage fund focused on consumer brands at the forefront. And then we'll do some subset of the fund will be towards technology that powers those brands.
Great.
Because we have a direct relationship with all of the brands. We were a great person to be on the cap table. We can make customer introductions fairly easy. But the core thesis is around consumer brands and them being well capitalized and with the intent of getting out at the right time and everyone around the table
well
making
being
money.
Appropriately capitalized.
Right.
Appropriately capitalized yeah. yes. at the right valuation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, God, we can sit here for hours talking about how many companies, particularly women, who've been undercapitalized
mm-hmm.
and have like figured out how to make
yes.
it work.
Because they're right. so disciplined, right? They're
so,
so
disciplined.
They know, they look at every penny and how is it going to return, and they make decisions based on that. And part of the problem with this overcapitalization of a lot of these, and it's not just consumer brands, but they tend to get hurt the most because their structure is a little bit different. So it's just this lack of discipline. Mm-hmm. And so you get on the wheel of, you know, marketing spend and acquisition, and you're just paying and paying and paying and paying and paying. And sure, maybe you have a nice line going up at your top line growth. And then, you know, you open up the trunk and look, you open up the hood and look underneath, and it's a mess.
It's a mess.
Right? I mean, it's an absolute
mess.
They
just gave all their money to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, if anybody's,
doing well,
if anybody's benefited from this, yes. it's those guys. And then, of course, what happens is who's ultimately, you know, the consumer brands, they're IPO is not going to be the end state for a lot of these folks.
No, look at
for
Blue
the vast
Abram.
Majority.
It's eventually going to be delisted.
It
has to be. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of M&A activity. So who's ultimately going to either do the big growth rounds or do an out-and-out acquisition? It's going to be private equity or strategics,
mm-hmm.
larger, right? And these are real business people.
Oh, yes.
Right? They are
that
solid.
Understand unit
that,
economics.
That understand, and they understand profitability mm-hmm. and cash flow positive and, you know, creating business cases on investment yeah. and what's the return.
No, they don't futz around with, like, I like you. Here's $100,000.
There's
like
an interesting story there. Founders so authentic. You know what I mean? They're going to look, and that's just, and that's what they're really good at. And so when I, you know, have initial conversations with companies and I'm interested in investing, that's a conversation that we have. Because if you start at that point, and to get, I think, you know, right now, to get on the radar that I think would is a reasonable stage, PE and strategics are all coming down lower. They are because they see the emergence. This is when they can get in.
It's and then they can actually help mold that brand.
They can help mold that brand before they get into trouble, before they get too big, because they have the whole back end that they can leverage, whether it's the supply chain or the accounting and finance, things that are not strategic to the brand, but can really help propel it if they don't make all the mistakes back
there. And these strategics, such as, let's say, General Mills, their brands are losing market share.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know? Yes.
Which I don't understand why today, you know, this whole thing about Gillette's not allowed to buy. Yes. It's so stupid. I mean, I don't get it. I don't think anyone in the government gets it. But that's why they're buying.
Of course.
Harry's or whatever, you know, Dollar Shave Club is because they need to get their market share back.
They're buying innovation. They're buying access to that new, younger consumer that's buying that way. They're buying access to how to do it, how to operate digitally. And it's better for them to buy than to try to do it internally. They're just not structured for it.
They cannot.
Yeah. No.
And today they're super focused on the millennial customer. But one of our big theses is that Gen Z is going to come into money soon enough and are already have some spending power through their parents, but still have a lot of pull and power and care about very different things than millennials did. And so we're starting now to see brands pop up that are catered to that demographic.
I'm sure. But what's interesting is that the most money that spend is actually people 50 and over.
Yes, of course. They have the most disposable income, for sure.
And they're... It's almost the first generation that is going to, that is reinventing themselves from 50 to 100 because they're living longer. They're in phenomenal shape. You know, look at J-Lo. My God. Okay. We should all look that good at 50 years old. But, you know, why is no one going after that consumer?
I think there's a couple of reasons. First of all, they are, you know, there are some categories in health and certainly in fashion.
Definitely in health.
Definitely in health. I mean, there's
menopause tech is going to be the new.
Menopause tech is so huge, and I just think they're not standalone businesses.
They're not. They're great bolt-on, right?
Like, yes.
But it's not a standalone business. I think this customer is hard. I think she is set in her ways. She doesn't have, you know, a shingle out saying, come advertise to me. A lot of these folks are very used to, I mean, I think about how I spend. I know my brands. I'm comfortable with them. They're reliable. It's going to take a lot because I'm an early stage investor. I actually trial all this stuff, but I'm pretty unusual, you know, in things that my tried.
Yeah, you're an early adopter.
Yeah. So I think it's a hard customer to get. It's an expensive customer to get. I think she's coveted. Absolutely coveted. And for the companies that can manage to acquire her, one of my portfolio companies, Carbon 38, has a wonderful, wonderful segment of these women.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of interest in that brand because of their ownership of that customer. She now trusts Carbon to come for all of her, now even some ready-to-wear, but specifically her
for
athletic
herself.
Wear.
So what is the Generation Z, you know, products?
I love me Gen Z. I really do.
I love Gen Z. I mean, 10 years ago, I remember talking about it. So it's like they are, you know, listen, every generation reinvents itself based on the past generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just like that generation. There's something about they care about the world. They care about what they want to do. They are very community oriented.
Yes.
They don't care what anyone looks like.
They shop with their values.
Yes.
They really do.
They really do. And they shop.
Yeah.
And they shop.
That's the big, you just hit it on the head. They care about sustainability. They care about the world they're leaving behind for future generations. And they're super young to even be thinking about things like that. Whereas millennials kind of just wanted the hot, flashy, whatever was marketed to me. I'm like, ooh, this is retargeted directly towards me. I'm going to buy this.
It's amazing that, you know, you can see something in the morning and all day long you're retargeted.
Yeah.
But they can't figure out how to do the Iowa caucus.
That's a whole other podcast.
Oh my God.
How is that possible?
You know, I'm always like,
it's
when I'm
app.
Retargeted, you know, I'm always like, God, that is just amazing.
Until you buy it, they're going to keep coming after you. Yeah. And millennials are totally open to that. They're like, I want to unbundle everything in my home. I want everything in my house and everything in my daily life to be a startup that is directly speaking to me, that has great customer service. And so
it's an extension of my personal brand.
Exactly.
Yes. Very much so. Very
so
much
I think
so.
Millennials started that trend. I think we'll see that with Gen Z, but they just care about very different things, and their values are of utmost importance. They shop with their values, and we'll see that continue.
I read somewhere 97% of Gen Z still shops in a store.
I think it depends on the category.
Okay.
If anything, I think there's a little bit of reverting back to the appreciation of the physical experience.
Okay.
So if you remember years ago, Andreessen wrote an article saying software ate the retail or something like that, that it was all going to take over. You know how the pendulum swings in this world, right? So it was very much, oh, everything's going to be digital. Oh, well, wait a minute. We forgot about that really important element of social entertainment, touch and feel, connection with mm-hmm. real people. Okay, so maybe we do some pop-ups. Maybe we open up some standalone flagship stores. Maybe we do a store in store. You know, so we dabbled a little bit. I think it's settling back. I think the social aspect of...
It's so important.
So I do think that... I think a lot of it depends on category. For initial trial and adoption for some of these categories, it's going to be predominantly in store, especially around, for women, beauty, skincare, anything that requires, you know, actually on your body,
mm-hmm.
because the Pantones that you see digitally are not usually correct.
They're definitely not. Right. So what happens to the insanity of pricing, right? I mean, so, you know, I had a thesis, was very simple. I would put in $50,000 and it had to execute at a $5 million valuation,
mm-hmm.
period,
mm-hmm.
1%.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a lot of these companies didn't even deserve $5 million, mm-hmm. right? But I do appreciate that they raised $1 million and they only wanted to sell 20% of their company and all that nonsense. But, you know, then I had people now coming, you know, we're raising a seed round. We're raising $3 million at a $12 million valuation.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay...
Wait,
and also how do we make money
that? Yeah.
You just screwed yourself.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to be the inflection point when this is all going to change, and how does it change?
I think it starts with the beginning, and
right.
so that's why we're starting at the seed stage.
What does seed mean?
So
yeah, very good question.
These days, there's pre-seed, there's post-seed, there's pre-A.
And the range of seed is in
yeah.
here.
we're looking for brands that are doing 1 to 5 million in revenue.
Okay.
And we will write a check, if we lead the deal, we'll write a check of about $1 million to $1.5 million.
Okay.
Into, let's say it's that $3 million round, it could be a $2 million, $2.5 million round, something within that range. And then if we participate in a round, we'll do a $500K check.
So it's basically a pre-series A.
Yes.
And that, I think, especially with consumer brands, it's probably a better way to describe it. Because, you know, going back to your point about these valuations, by the time, when I look at my current portfolio and I try to identify, okay, where did all of these come from? Because they've all been very different, the sources of how they've reached me. The ones, by the time I see a deal and it's come through VC channels, you know, I have a lot of friends, the chances of me doing it are next to none. Because the valuation has been bumped up. And it's not even just how do you make money, but it's you're setting yourself up for failure for subsequent rounds.
Completely.
Because where do you go from there?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. So you're either going to have a flat or down round, which that early in the stage is enough to crush a company and destroy
it. And to crush a founder who has done everything right that they know how to do.
Yes.
And then they have a down round because it was overpriced to start.
Yes.
Like, that's not pretty.
So we'll often be first institutional capital, let's say, that comes. Maybe they've raised some friends and family and
mm-hmm.
some small angel money. But we want to be that first institution that really, and we have this conversation with them. One of our kind of core values is honesty and transparency. And we
and
believe
alignment,
in that.
Alignment.
Through
so
and
that,
through. Yeah. And we will say to them, what do you think the best path of funding, who do you think your next round of funding should come from? And the ones that don't align with us, that are raising at crazy valuations, we will not
we
do
wish
it.
Them luck.
Walk away.
Yeah.
we wish them luck.
As you should. I mean, you know, I met a venture capitalist who's raising a fund this past week, who, small fund, you know, the companies that she's going after, no one's ever even heard of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the way, this one is going to be a $1 billion company.
Yep.
And it's just like, she did her homework. She's out there finding
mm-hmm.
niches that she feels have value with mm-hmm. great founders
mm-hmm. that aren't in the VC stream.
Correct.
Right? So the geographically, I think you have to look we just assume, because we live in this world, that and everybody's kind of chasing the same deals, which is so dysfunctional and destroys so
and
much value.
Basically, you know, I want to believe that we are also creating good things for our country
yeah.
and our economy
mm-hmm.
and jobs,
mm-hmm.
right? Why aren't we going to
Ohio and finding these companies.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's part of our strategy as well. It's not just stay on the coastal cities. Obviously, those are big places that these brands are being started. But we're happy to look all over, and we've done some deals in Canada as well.
Yeah, Canada. For me, cities like Portland,
secondary cities.
Yes, you know, where they have some infrastructure, because you do need talent, right? There's a few requirements I think that will make it easier for founders, but they haven't been yet tainted, right? They're good people. They really believe in what they're doing. They want to build a real business. Mm-hmm. They know that eventually, as soon as possible, they need to be making money. They want the right founder. They're not looking for a get rich quick scheme, right? They're doing it for all the right reasons. Those cities produce a lot of those folks. This woman in Toronto.
I know someone in Canada I should introduce you to.
Oh, great. Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I talked to them, but I'm not doing it right now, but I see what's going on there, and the valuation is right, and they're just hungry. And
exactly.
She and him said, you know, we're in this for 10, 15 years. Yeah. This doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. And I thought, oh my God.
When do you hear that again? Yeah, when do you hear that, right? But that's what it takes to build a consumer
No kidding.
Brand,
I think we're going to see a lot. I mean, I come from the venture world, right? And Deb's connections have been more on the private equity side. So it's actually...
Which is a nice combination.
Yeah. Great combination. Yes. But I think we're going to see a lot of these consumer brands, omni-channel, direct-to-consumer, however they start or end up being, pull back down and realizing that the way to start a successful brand is in this way.
Completely.
Versus the overhyped, overcapitalized, at crazy valuations in the venture community.
Yeah.
And so there will still be some, but I think we'll see a pullback.
And I think that's okay. If you happen to hit in an artery and you're in Allbirds, although I've never seen the financial of Allbirds, so I can't even comment on it. Are there going to be, you know, one or two or three of those? Yeah, great.
It's fantastic.
We're probably not going to be in it, right? Or we might, but who knows? It doesn't have to be. The thing is that if we get into brands where we've got great founders, all of the requirements, right? So the addressable market, it doesn't need to be a billion. These brands don't need to be a billion. And with what it takes now structurally to launch and grow these brands, you don't need to be $1 billion.
Well, you understand that from the private equity world.
Yes.
Right? So someone said to me, I spoke on something the other day, and the venture capitalist said to me, you know, oh my God, that venture capitalist is like, wow, they are killing it. They're like, they're it. And I was like, why do you say that? Mm-hmm. There's been no exit so far.
Right.
Right.
And he looked at me and he's like, wow, you're right. I said, paper's worthless.
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 Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, so this whole concept, you know, God knows what's going on behind closed doors.
Oh, yeah. And it's always bad. It's always tough, right? To build these companies, it's always
tough. It's tough forever. I invested in this one company very early that was a mess and fixed it. And now the company is huge.
Oh, good for you.
And my husband invested in it on this last round. And I know that he's so excited, the founder, because he's wanted them to be in it, both of us in it. And, you know, I see the financial and stuff, but I'm not really involved in the day to day anymore. You know, I said, how's it doing? And he said, well, there's some problems, you know, of course. And I said, here's the thing. There's problems when you're doing $3. There's
Absolutely.
Problems when you're doing $500,000. There's problems when you're doing $50 billion. Mm-hmm. There's always problems.
The nature of them is just different.
Right.
That's it. It's like kids, right?
It's so much like kids.
You've got little 100%. Kids, little problems, you know.
Big kids,
problems.
Big problems.
Exactly.
Yeah,
100%. Exactly. I know.
That's great. Well, I'm super excited for you guys. I mean,
Thank
what a
you.
Great team.
Thank you. I think so, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm very, very, very fortunate.
And Willow is the place to go.
Willow is the place to go.
If you're building
a consumer brand.
You want to build it the right way.
Build it the right way with women actually who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Contact.
Yes.
Yes, please. Okay, we'd love to talk to you.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you
for having us. Thank you so much. Sure. You're like the OG. I mean, you're who we all look to. So, to officially launch Willow with you is an absolute honor.
This is the first time we're talking about it publicly. And for me, it hits home because I remember being 24 years old and running over to you being like, please take me to lunch. And now I'm sitting here on your couch.
No, it's so good.
So this is incredible.
No, it's great. Yeah, I'm super happy for you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Amanda and Deborah for joining me on Positively Gotham Gal. If you're interested in connecting with Willow, go to willowgrowth.com.